So, the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is a very challenging mitzvah, even though it's so simple, because it involves remembering, and remembering for some of us, myself very much included, is one of the hardest things we can do. And even with all the technology and all the apps and all the reminders, we still find ways to not remember. The bell goes off at the wrong time. We become too used to the app, so we don't even notice it. It's reminding us of something. I remember one year when the Sfiras HaOmer was in sync with the day of the month. So you could look at my watch and see the date and remember what day of the Sfira was, you know, the 17th of the month, or the 17th day of Sfira, whatever it was. And then one night I counted after midnight and didn't realize that it wasn't going to be in sync and messed myself up. So even with all the blessings of technology, we can still find it very challenging to stay on target with this mitzvah of Sfira. So it's a mitzvah which should be so simple. We're less supposed to sign a kiss, less for anything. You don't need any expenditure. You don't need any minion. You don't need any resources. It doesn't take more than half a minute at max. And yet, it's still so challenging because it involves remembering, and we all know just how challenging that can be. So why is that true? So if you got a chance to see today a little bit, so there is a major machlokas rishonim on this point. Tosfos in two places, Tosfos in Menachos and Daf Samach Vav, and Tosfos in Megillah and Daf Chaf, both quote two debates among the rishonim. One question is, does Sfiras HaOmer specifically have to be at night? Right, that's the context of the Mishnah and the Sefer Megillah. There we're told that there are mitzvos hayom that apply all day, mitzvos halayil that apply all night, at least meper hadin. We always have a concept of reason like being in the mitzvos, that it's kedai to do the mitzvah at the earliest possible time, but strictly speaking, it could be all night, all day. Those are acceptable if it's a nighttime or a daytime mitzvah. So in that context, the discussion comes up, is Sfiras HaOmer only a nighttime mitzvah, or could it be done during the day as well? So that's the machlokas harishonim, that according to the Bahag, it could be counted during the day, and the Beinu Tam is machmir, has to be done during the night. Then the question that we're alluding to here is the major issue of what happens if your app fails you and you miss a day. So that was also a machlokas. And the Bahag was Machmir. And the Bahag maintained that you cannot keep counting if you miss a day because of this key word in the Torah. What word is that? Tmimus. That the Tmimus at the top, the Sfira has to be perfect. And if you're missing a day, then it's not perfect. So we have these two debates in the Rishonim. And it manifests itself in a very specific way in terms of practical halacha. And what do we say in terms of practical halacha? That if you don't count at night, you count during the day without a bracha. If you miss a day completely, you count without a bracha from that point on. And if you do count during the day, then for the following days, we let you resume with a bracha. Count during the day without a bracha, we let you resume with a bracha. So how did we get to such a formulation? So there are at least two very different ways to address our current practice, and those two ways will impact pretty much every shiloh that comes up in Sfiras HaOmer. Basically every issue. This is different than what we said about Shalach Manos, so every issue could be, if you want to, could be hung on the Manos of Leiden, the Trumas Hadesh, and here it's different. It's not about really Fakiris and Afkaminis. This is just about two completely different ways to explain something, and it's interesting how they really bring different perspectives to almost every issue that's here. So, the issue is as follows. What we might call the traditional Hesber is as follows. What's the question about whether or not you can count if you miss a day? What's the central question? So according to the traditional Hesber, the way the Prima Gaudim and others explain, it's a question of, is Sfiras HaOmer one big mitzvah, or is it 49 separate mitzvahs? But if it's one big mitzvah, so then it's like a balloon. If it's got a hole anywhere in the balloon, the whole balloon deflates. Doesn't matter that the rest of it is complete. It can't stay up if there's a hole anywhere. So that's true about Sfira as well. Any missing day is going to knock out the whole thing. It's all one mitzvah, so therefore, if you miss a day, you're done. While if it's 49 separate mitzvahs, so then, as the expression goes, tomorrow is another day. So if you miss day 9, it's not going to have any impact on day 10. Pick up again from day 10 and keep going. So under the assumption that that's the basic issue, so then how do we come to the practice that we come to? So then the assumption is that if you miss a day, you might as well count without a bracha. Because since it's a suffix, it's machlokis in the Rishonim, so then we'll be machmir on the mitzvah, count, and we'll be mekel on the bracha. Why do we say you should be machmir on the bracha, machmir on the mitzvah? Mekel on the bracha, we understand, right? Because suffix bracha is a hakel, okay, and it doesn't impact on the mitzvah itself, so leave the bracha out. But why are we machmir on the mitzvah? So that gets into the question, what is Sfiras Omer? Sfiras Omer, a mitzvah d'oraisa or a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So on the surface, it's clearly Minhag Torah, it's described in Parshas Emor. But most of the Rishonim assume that it's contingent on the Hakravas HaOmer. Nowadays, you don't have Hakravas HaOmer. So therefore, it's only a Zeichel HaMikdash today, and it's a din d'rabbanan. The minority view is the view of the Rambam, that it is a din Minhag Torah. So if it's a din d'rabbanan, so you might say, Suffolk Lahakel, let's not even bother counting. Let's not just leave out the mitzvah, let's not bother counting. So that's not a wise approach here. It makes sense to count for a couple reasons. First of all, I think we've mentioned it sometime this year, the Raon in Pesachim, it says we don't apply Suffolk to Rabbanan Lahakel when it's a Dabar Shalesko Tirfa. So here, as we said, the difficult part is remembering, but if you remember, doing the mitzvah is pretty much the easiest mitzvah you have. So it's certainly, if anything is a less botircha, this is a less botircha, so it's certainly kedai to do it. Also, we may add here that if we're saying it's about a suffix among the machlokas and the Rishonim, so the truth is, most of the Rishonim say you can keep counting. It's really the Bahad who has this opinion that it's a problem. In general, we find a few places in Halacha, the Bahad was a very, very chashuv Rishon, who we have a lot of deference for. So there are times when we defer, we show respect to the Bahag within the halachic system, even though he's not the majority of you, so this is one of them, that we show deference to the Bahag here. But there is a big svara to say the other way, and that's the view of most Rishonim, so it makes sense to factor that in. So it's a reasonable approach to say that one should be machmir on the mitzvah, should count, and not make a bracha, because that is a topic about, so we'll leave the bracha out.
It's interesting that we're willing to cite against the Baha'i in regards to that, but we're citing with the Baha'i in terms of not saying the bracha.
Well, no, so we're basically citing with him. We're assuming that his position requires enough attention that we'll leave out the bracha. But it's still good practice to do it, because there's no downside to doing it, and especially since most of the Rishonim actually say you're mechuyev to do it. So
against the Baha'i.
Right, but it doesn't matter, there's no cost to it. Right? You're not hurting the Baha'i by counting without a bracha. You wouldn't have a problem with that. So it's not against the Baha'i, it's being associated to the possibility, which is a pretty strong possibility, that there is absolutely no downside. Like I said, it's the easiest mitzvah we have, so it makes a lot of sense to do it, and that seems to be a reasonable practice. Hi.
Just related
to
in terms of what the function of bracha is, I know some of the Rosh Hashanah not trying to say that the bracha, and then you say, the part of the bracha?
Well, the way we say it is really distinct from the bracha. I mean, the bracha does play a role sometimes in establishing kavanah and things like that, which is a part of it. We'll get to that, hopefully. But in the way we recite the Sefirah today, the bracha and the recitation are distinct. Hi.
If according to Rav Rishon, the Sefirah is Dera Lama, how does the phenomenon start with only few mitzvahs that people actually bother to say the Hinni Mukhan? And was he one more? Most likely it's not actually Moshe Kasa B'Torah.
Well, it's a Zeifer for that, so it's going to be Lamed's first night. So, as you know, the Hinni Mukhan and Zuman is all subject to great, great controversy. And that the Rebbe Yehuda had tremendous opposition to recitation and things like that in general, anywhere. How to explain why, I think, cautious, because we have this few second pause in Tefillah where it becomes a little bit more of a ritual, less of a ritual, depending on what the culture in the shul is, or then there are people who are taking longer, so other people are waiting around, and they're trying to figure out how to make it more meaningful. But you could also say that the fact that it's the Rabbanan, or Moshe Chasim B'Torah, is, especially in this case, not really a contradiction, because if the idea is it's a Zefer, right, Kamo, the idea is certainly written in the Torah. So it's certainly, at least, a Zefer for the Torah. So all the more so, perhaps, if we're not able to fulfill the actual mitzvah itself, maybe one could say that we, Davka, would want to remind ourselves that it's written in the Torah this way. Could also add that, again, the Noach Yehuda was very opposed to the whole Shem Yifud, etc. kind of approach, but in terms of the question of mitzvah srichas kavana, so it is possible that we paskin, that's also a discussion, but that we paskin that the nature of kavana is different for d'oraisas and rabbanans. The more common position is that d'oraisas require kavana and rabbanans don't require kavana. That's the Magen Avraham quotes that view, that's the more well-known view. But there is also a way to say it the other way around, which I think there's a certain svara to, and then so it's the Hamid quote to view like this, that you could say that a mitzvah min HaTorah has this halacha of stamma l'shma, that maybe you could go around and talk about this a little bit, I think in Parsha Shir, Parsha Zayikra, like this whole idea of stamma l'shma. So I think logically one could maintain that there is a stamma l'shma by d'oraisa, but the Rabbanans require more of a pointing. So if you want to make a lumbus it might be worth to talk about, you know, to put together a position on why that may develop. But that's all speculative. I think Adin was up first.
Yeah, a couple of questions. Just about the shame that you put your brief. I never understood why some people say that you say pursue yourself over it, because shouldn't everything in your life be the shame you put your brief, especially every mitzvah. So saying only pursue yourself over implies that every other mitzvah that you don't, and this, especially when it's a machlokes, the Rabbanan, the rice, whether or not what you're doing, so that
goes to Noach Yehuda. That was another Yehuda's point. Noach Yehuda, in his tshuva, this is one of the major fights that was at the core of the Hasidic Misnagdic debate. And there's a lot more to say about this, but it's really a little off topic, or a lot bit off topic. But just address it very briefly. That was exactly what Noach Yehuda said, that the default by mitzvahs is stamma l'shma, which you could argue is a terminology correct or not. That's a whole different discussion. But the phrase that appears in the beginning of Maseches Vachim, that midnight karbanos are default premise to be l'shma, that should be our attitude by mitzvos as well. That was the Noach Yehuda's point, that we assume that we're doing mitzvos l'shma. And he made the point that you just made. He said, so therefore, if one feels he has to say l'shem yichud, he's essentially implying that when he doesn't say it, that it's not l'shma. And it undermines that whole mentality, and that was why he objected to it. So that, your point being well taken, that's the Noach Yehuda's point. But then I was just saying to Shaul's point that maybe we could say a little bit of a diyum l'chatzchus on this particular practice, that maybe all the more so if it's Rabbanan, that I think there's a svara to say, again, it's not the most common svara, though Magen Avraham quotes the opposite point, that mitzvos tzrichas kavana by mitzvos mehatorah, not by Rabbanan. I think there's a svara to say the other way, that mitzvos mehatorah specifically are stamma l'shma, they have the whole package, while mitzvos Rabbanan, which are more what we call chovas hagavra, it's about the individual to decide how to do it, so he has to insert his own l'shma, so maybe therefore l'shem yichud might have a little bit more basis to it, and especially because it's a drabbanan that is zeicher l'mikdash, it's one of those drabbanans that really is connected in a very direct way to something written in the Torah, so maybe one could say that's why the practice developed, to say this is what we're doing, as they did drabbanan kamosha kasa b'Torah, to reflect that which the Torah advocates for when it's fully derived. Yeah, it's all speculative, but maybe that's a decent mahal.
So I'm going to ask, according to the Bahag, if you knew you were going to miss a day, mm-hmm. you started counting the first day, should you not do it?
A great question. Very, very good question. Hopefully we'll get to that in a few minutes. All right, this is a big topic. We'll see how much we can get in. Okay, so we haven't even finished the first Hezbollah yet. So, according to him, we finished halfway through the first Hezbollah. So, first Hezbollah says that the reason we count without a bracha if you miss a day is because of the machlokas harishonim about it. So, it makes sense to leave out the bracha, but to keep counting. The reason we count during the day without a bracha, according to this Hezbollah, same story. That's also a machlokas. So since it's a machlokas, again, we might as well count, because the Rishonim will say that it works. But again, we brought the bracha because of the view of Rebbeinu Tam and the others that it's not the mitzvah. So same story.
Yeah.
If we're counting during the day. So both issues would have the same reasoning. According to this approach, you count during the day without a bracha, and you count after missing a day, for future days, you count without a bracha because of a suffix in both cases. Now, the next step is if you combine the two. So why is it that if you count during the day, then we let you resume counting with a bracha the next night and for all the future nights? Because, according to this explanation, it's because of a sveika. That essentially we can combine the two sveikas together and say that that should allow us to resume counting afterwards. There are different ways to explain what a sveika is and why it works, but what's the simplest and most relevant to us right now, so we'll use this, is to say it's about playing the odds. Right? That basically there's a 50% chance, in general, a suffix could refer to a 50% chance, to say there's a 50% chance that if you miss a day, you can keep counting. And even according to the 50% that says you can't keep counting, but there's 50% within that, that missing a day is not does not include counting through the day. If you count through the day, that's not called missing a day. So if you put that 50% on top of it, so you have 75% that you can keep counting after that. So here's actually the comment made before we started. I said to Shaul about in terms of different opinions and different Rishonim, really you can say there's really 100% chance, because if you put all of the hot views together, then you can say make your odds even better. But let's call it, let's say for simplicity's sake, a 75% chance. So here, it's interesting because normally we say sveik sveiko lakula, that if you put the two sveikas together of a situation, we can be mako. Here, this is really what you call a sveik sveiko lachumra. And this reflects that there's a certain tension between our emotional relation to this issue and the purely halakhic relationship to the issue. Because the idea of not making a bracha if you miss a day. So understandably, most of us get disappointed if we're left out of the bracha. So we feel it's a chumrah to say you can't make the bracha. We want to make the bracha appropriately. So to not be able to do that, we feel like that's a chumrah. But halakhically, that's a kula. If we say safek mitzvos lahakel, safek brachos lahakel, we're saying is it's a kula to not do it. So here in this sugya in general, you have a little bit of a disconnect between the way we relate to this issue emotionally and the actual appropriate halachic terminology. So here what we're really talking about is creating a sveika lahachmir, a sveika to say that you are obligated to make the bracha and therefore should, even though we'll relate to it as a kula. So yeah, I get to make the bracha because that's what you want to do, but technically speaking, that's really a chumrah. Okay, so that's the traditional hesber, that it's based on a combination of sveikos, and at the core of this whole hesber, the main question is, what is svira? Is it one big mitzvah, or is it 49 separate mitzvahs? Okay, so far so good. So Soloveitchik had a whole different approach to this issue. He had an approach that completely redefined the issue, and affects every single shiloh pretty much that comes up. And it's a quite innovative position. Just for the record, he's not the only one to say this. There were a few others who said it as well. For example, Lubavitcher Rebbe, in his Kedushin Bira Mahashas, says pretty much the same thing. The shiloh from Shuvah's Evan Yakara, he quotes from Reb Zevin, the famous Reb Zevin of Moed Ben Balacher, and it's like a Tugia Talmudus, who also has a similar approach. I saw in the Haggadah Eish Tamid, written by acquaintance of mine, Shlomo Simonon from Brooklyn, who quotes, I think, from Yisrael, or from one of his sons, a similar approach to the family, or saw Eish's cousins, or example, I think that which had said the same idea. So there are a few others who have such an approach, but however number you count, however many are associated with it, it totally redefines the issue. And this hesber says as follows, that really it's no question whether it's one mitzvah or 49 mitzvahs. Really, according to everybody, it's 49 mitzvahs. Now you might say, well, I knew that already. You know, you already had a sense it was 49 mitzvahs because we make 49 brachos. So doesn't that show you that it's 49 mitzvot? Well, maybe not. I mean, it is a little bit of a clue, but it's not always necessarily the case that there's a one-to-one correlation between brachos and mitzvot. Sometimes you have mitzvot that get more than one bracha, sometimes you have mitzvot that get less than one bracha. It's not really a necessarily compelling correlation, but it's okay, it's a little bit of a clue, and the Rav maintained that that's indeed the case, that it is 49 separate mitzvot. What's the other possibility? You could say that a bracha is associated not with a kiyum ha-mitzvah, but with a maisa ha-mitzvah, that if a mitzvah has a number of actions, even if it's all one mitzvah, so then maybe that will all get counted as one, even if it has a number of brachos associated with it. So it's possible, but in any event, still, maybe in this case, it actually is the case that it's 49 separate mitzvot. So if that's true, so then what's the problem with missing a day? Why shouldn't I be able to miss a day? Sedrus elevation. The issue is not that they're all one unit, they're 49 units, but the problem with missing a day is that you're not actually counting. Counting is more than simply saying a number. If you are going through a bunch of things and you say 1, 2, 5, 9, 13, 26, that's not called counting. That's a football play. And that means that you're just saying numbers. But counting means you have to keep track of all of the items in between. And if you're skipping numbers, that's not called counting. So therefore, according to this Mahalath, you have to have every part up until now. Otherwise, what you're doing, even though it's its own mitzvah, but counting it means it's got to be added onto an existing structure in order to be called counting.
An explanation, perhaps, but also explain why there's no suffix yom account in
Bloodstars,
because you can't have a count.
So that's a very good point. So it's interesting. So that is a question that was raised. Why don't we say Sveka Yoma by Sveras Elmer? So that was raised by the Ran. The Ran and the Pesachim raised this question. The Ran says ultimately it'll be a bizoyin to Shuas. By the time we get to Shuas, we're going to have a suffix because of the whole process that led up to it. But there is a famous position of Dvar of Rav who essentially says what you just said. And whether or not it's the same thing as the Rav, there are those who dispute it. I think the Rav really agreed with Dvar of Rav. But your point is well taken. I think it does invoke the Dvar of Rav, which says the point. The Dvar Avraham, just for the record, in terms of the Rav agreeing with him, the Dvar Avraham is the one who gave Snifa to the Rav, just as a point of historical reference. When the Rav came to America, so he needed some type of document that said he was a rabbi. So the Dvar Avraham is the Rav of Kovno. So he wrote him a letter. And the letter, you can read the letter if it was printed, they came out with a sefer after the Rav passed away, the sefer called Zifron HaRav. It was a sefer zikara for him. So in the beginning of the sefer, they published this letter from the Dvar Avraham. So the letter said, it had a language like halacha kamoso b'chol makom. Halacha is like him and everything. That's, in terms of the Harari put it, that's basically a blank check in halacha. That I sign off on everything. So at this point, it could be that the Rav and the Dvar Avraham were saying something similar, that the Dvar Avraham essentially said that the reason we don't have Sveika Dioma by Svira is that it wouldn't make sense. How can you say it? Today is 5 and maybe 6? So then neither is a real count. A count means that you're going to assign a number to the day, and if you're saying it's either 5 or 6, that's not called counting. And maybe that undermines the whole mitzvah itself in a unique fashion. So it does seem to evoke this idea, whether it's the same or not, a subject to debate. There are other approaches to the whole Sveika Dioma question. Also a whole literature that then evolved, and the Kasitskov and others have chuvas. So would we say, what would happen if somebody's really not sure about what day sphere is? So let's say he doesn't have any way to find out for sure what it is. So he counts one night, he says, today is 5 days and today is 6 days. That's his basis. So would we say that he's not Yotze? He's not Yotze either possibility? Or we go even more machmer. Let's say somebody doesn't know, so he takes a stab in the dark, and then it turns out afterwards that he's right. So we say, well, he's not Yotze because he can't do suffix. But Chuva is written about this. It's hard to say if everything else we're going to be so machmer and put all these numbers together. But there is literature that that developed around this question of what exactly is the issue with suffering counting, so to speak. So, in any event, which, by the way, also comes up in the context of Nida and counting the 7 days, which I put a post about this on the page, my Makomos, one of the extra reasons to make sure we're listening, because it was Daf Yomi in the past 3 days, so it was a very recent Daf Yomi, so we try to get the Tzupas very close to the Dafim that we're talking about, so it's almost bordering on synergy. In any event, so this question of how to understand why it is he can't miss a day, so said the Rav, that's the issue, but it's not called counting. So that's why it's a problem if you miss a day. So then, said the Rav, why is it that if you count during the day, you count without a bracha? So here as well, he said it's not because of the safek and because of the machlokes rishonim. Rather, he says, if you count during the day, you don't make a bracha. Why? Because it's not a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah. So then why am I counting at all? What does that accomplish? What it accomplishes is that it maintains the counting structure. So even though it's not called counting, maybe it's not called mitzvah rather, it is called counting, so you'll be able to resume the next day. So it's a completely different way of seeing things. That now counting the next day is not because of shveika, a combination of all the different machlokes. Really, it's just because you've kept up the structure, so that allows you to keep counting from that point on. So that's a totally different hesber, just to recap the key points between the two. The key points of a traditional hesber is that there's a machlokes here, whether it's 49 separate mitzvahs or one big mitzvah. The position that we're worried about, the Bahag, about missing a day, is premised on it being one big mitzvah. And what we do in practice is because of a combination of sefers. That's the traditional hesber. Well, according to the Rav, no, the Bahag that we're worried about agrees that it's 49 separate mitzvos. The issue is the definition of counting. And he innovates this very important idea that it's possible to be machalik, it's possible to distinguish between the mitzvah of sphere and the count of sphere. You can have the count without the mitzvah, and that's what counting during the day is. Okay, so far so good? David?
Yeah, so the Rav says that you count the next day because you want to keep that structure. Aren't you exactly losing the structure by not counting at night?
Well, ideally you would count at night, but the idea, not necessarily structure in terms of disciplined behavior, to do everything at the same time, structure in terms of there being a continued count. That
so
when you count day 8, you need to have day 7 beforehand. So to get the mitzvah of day 7, you have to do that during the mitzvah slot at night. But if you miss that slot, and you do it during the day, at least your 8 is meaningful, because your 8 comes on top of the 7.
So if I get to 9 now, and I still haven't counted day 8, can I just counting back to back right after.
So there was a view in Rishonim like that. It doesn't seem to be a view that we practice like. But the Mishnah Berurah quotes a view from the Gaon in exactly that point. It says that in order to keep the, essentially like you're saying, that if we don't have to really be tied into the mitzvah, so maybe you should be able to count back to back and say last night was day 8, and may they make the bracha, and tonight is day 9. So there was a view like that. There is a view Mishnah Berurah quotes. It's not a view that we actually practice actual performance, but there is such a position that which would be consistent with throughout's approach. Okay, so as I said, this affects a lot of different issues, and we could talk about probably more issues than we'll have time for, but I'll prioritize questions that were asked. So Shmuley asked a question before, so we'll address that question first, and then I'll mention another question that somebody asked, and then we'll see how much time we have left. So, just but again, there are many, many issues that are redefined by this question. Maybe we'll pick up with this in a future Sunday, but we'll prioritize first what was asked. So Shmuley asked, so what about days before this? Right? Because that would seem to be a logical outgrowth of the traditional hesber. Right? If the traditional hesber is that it's all one big mitzvah, and every day is connected to every other day, so it shouldn't only affect the future days. It would seem like it should affect the previous days also. It should have a retroactive effect, that if you miss day 12, So then not only can you not count from day 13, but 1 to 11, it seems retroactively, we're also not mitzvos either. So should we say that that means you have 11 brachos of batala on your hands? So you might say, well, who cares? I mean, nafkamina for what? Nafkamina for tshuva? What exactly can you do? What's done is done. So we'll address that in a second. It does have major nafkaminas, because not just philosophical, but what about somebody who knows or thinks that he's likely to miss a day? Let's say, for example, he knows he's going to have surgery. And the surgery is, big surgery, is going to leave him unconscious for more than 24 hours. Or let's say he's 117 years old, and for the last 104 years, every year, he makes it maybe up to day 4, and then he forgets. So it's a pretty strong chazaka, he's not gonna make it through. So maybe we should say, if you have a terrible track record, then it's not worth starting with a bracha. Or, there's a much longer discussion, the Mishnah Brura, assuming that women are pturos from Sfiras HaOmer, as a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, itself not the only way to see things, but if one assumes that that's true, so Mishnah Brura assumes that women should not count with a bracha, because since they're not chayavos in the first place, why risk the possibility of retroactive brachos of atala? Better to just avoid making the bracha and just count without it. So this has nafkaminas. This could affect situations. What about the days before you miss? So here there are basically three ways to look at it. There are those, like the Chida, who said that, yeah, taka, it's a bracha l'matala retroactively, and that's unfortunate. And if you know it's going to happen, then maybe you should factor that into your decisions. There are others who say, no, there's no such thing as a retroactive bracha l'matala. The whole thing doesn't exist in halacha. That if when you're doing a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah at the time, you make a bracha, even if something happens later on, to declare it not a mitzvah, that does not undo the bracha. It doesn't make a bracha retroactively a bracha of batala. So for example, this is our mitzvah that maintains, let's say somebody washes on bread. And it's actually happened to me this morning. Somebody washes on bread, and then they decide that they don't want to have enough bread to justify the bracha. Maybe it turns out, like, happened, they don't have as much bread as they thought they would. Or it turns out, say they decide in the middle, in between, somebody convinces them to start the Atkins diet, so now they don't want to have as much bread as they were going to have beforehand. So do we say, no, you're obligated, because since you only wash with a bracha if you're having a certain amount of bread, and now it turns out you're not doing that, so now your bracha and only until you're dying is going to be a bracha of batala. So we assume, no, that the bracha was made in good faith, if it was a decision afterwards, not have that much, so then that does make the bracha retroactively a bracha levatala. Or the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva about the concept of she'elas truma. Like, let's say somebody decides that they were mafresh truma, and they decide afterwards they want to undo the hafreshes truma through a she'elas chacha. So should we worry that, oh, they made a bracha when they did the hafreshes truma? So now that bracha was now going to be rendered a bracha levatala by the fact that you're undoing the truma. So here again, the Chasam Sofer says that no, there's no such thing as a retroactive bracha levatala, and therefore it's not a problem. So that's another approach to take, that yes, philosophically it may be true that your previous mitzvos were rendered empty, but at least you don't have to feel guilty about the bracha levatala problem, or nor do you have to take steps to prevent it if it's foreseeable. And therefore, that would have a major nafkamina, again, from Mishnah Brura's position about women. That affects 50% of the population. The other questions are a little bit more obscure, or a little bit less likely, perhaps, but certainly that question about how it affects women would very much be affected by that question. So according to Rav Soloveitchik's approach, great question in a second, according to Rav Soloveitchik's approach, all the more so it's true. Because not only is it not a bracha levatala retroactively, but the mitzvah is also okay retroactively. because that's a significant difference. The traditional Hezbollah said it's all one big package, so a hole anywhere messes up everything. But that's not what the Rav said. The Rav said that they're all distinct. It's just that you can't count the later number without having the earlier numbers. So it only affects from here on in. But before this is fine. Every number that was part of a unit, it's okay. It's only after you miss a day that you're going to have a problem, but not before. And again, very significant nafkaminas for the situation of when you know that it may happen, or when you have reason to be worried for the situation of women. All these questions, very significant nafkaminas. So,
according to this, we're assuming a woman counted properly the first 48 nights. Is there any reason that a woman, according to
Mishnah,
can't say
bracha
on the
49th
night?
No, presumably not. Maybe research, not. I mean, can't divide
bracha
for the first.
Yeah, kind of.
No, it makes sense. There'd be nothing to lose. It would seem. Yeah. I mean, in general, it's machlokas, the Ashkenazim, and the Sardim, that if we assume that Sfira is a mitzvah as Margrama, which is itself a machlokas, as Ramban seems to say the opposite, but let's assume it makes a problem more likely that Sfira is a mitzvah as Margrama. So then the question of can women volunteer? So the Ashkenazim Rishonim assume that women can volunteer to do mitzvos asei shazman grama, and they can say a bracha v'sher kedusha is also the tzibah. That's the view of Rebbe Natan and the Ashkenazim Rishonim. So Mr. Brewer would agree to all that. He says theoretically it's true that as mitzvah asei shazman grama, a woman is entitled to choose to do it and to make a bracha. However, because of the concern that you may end up with a retroactive bracha l'batala, so he thought it wasn't good advice. Of course, an earlier statement like that. There's a lot more to say about that. We're talking about that subject specifically, but maybe we'll have an opportunity to come back to that. But for now, just as far as it relates to this one craft, I'll just mention that point. So, there is a very labored Lamda Shashayla again trying to decide how many questions you have time for. So maybe we'll continue this in a future week. But there was a fascinating Shiloh that was addressed in the Shilohs and Tshuvas, Evan Pina. Evan Pina was written by Ibn Sion Nesher. He has the following hypothetical case. There is also a question. If you saw the first Gemara in the Marmakomas today, Menachos on the Chayim Beis, and Machlav Meral. So there is also a debate about whether or not Sfira can work through Shemei Akom. That Magen Avraham has a topic about this. It's a whole fascinating discussion by itself, how Shemei Kaoni works. It's a different discussion. But should you be able to fulfill Sfira if you're listening to somebody else? So normally we say, mitzvahs of speech usually do work through Shemei Kaoni. So why should we have any topic here? Presumably it should be the same thing. We should be able to do it through Shemei Kaoni. So the question was, you saw the Gemara talks about the pasuk, which fired them. Lachem, that there is a personal obligation. So some thought that maybe that means that that's to exclude listening to somebody else's sphere. But that's questionable for a bunch of reasons, a lot of them about this. First of all, maybe listening to somebody else's mitzvah is doing it yourself. Maybe that's how Shemei Kaoni works. Also, maybe the whole drasha is, I mean, this is the same point, the whole drasha is not coming to say that you can't listen to somebody else. Well, Drasha is contrasting it like we're counting for yoga. So there are some counts that we do commonly, that we don't have a personal obligation to count, but the tzibur keeps track of. And the chiddush, the sfiras ha'omer, is that we say the individuals also have to do it. That's not to exclude listening to somebody else's sphere. So Shemei Kaoni probably should work for sfiras ha'omer. Now, just also to be clear, we're talking about the sphere itself. The bracha for sure works through Sfira Soma. So that comes up much more often. If you have somebody who's in a situation where they missed a day and they're not counting with the bracha anymore, so the best solution really would be to listen to somebody else make the bracha and then count Sfira yourself. So the bracha for sure works through Sfira, through Shemei Kaoni. So we're talking about the Sfira itself. So you don't want to, even this easy mitzvah, it's a pretty lazy approach. You're saying even this easy three words, you don't want to say yourself and listen to somebody else. So, it should work. Question about that?
Yeah. Can someone who's not no longer in count of saying brachos, say for someone who is obligated?
Oh, so that's a great question. It's related to what I'm about to say. So there was a very lumbish question that Judah said would be a beautiful question, where he asks as follows. It says, let's say that I like Ari's sphere counting. So So I decide the first couple of days of Sfira that I'm going to go over to him and listen to him count Sfira, and I'll be Yotze with him through Shema Ekel. Then after a week, he gets annoyed about how difficult this is to coordinate, so I start counting Sfira on my own. Then on day 16, Arya calls me up and says, I got to tell you something. I missed last night. I missed 15. I'm out of the game. So maybe we should say like this. Oh, wait a minute. So he's out of the game. He's out of the game retroactively also. So his first 14 were no good. And one of those 14, I listened to him. I was Yotze for his spirit. So now we should say that I'm also out of the game, even though I've never missed a night. But it turned out that one of the nights that I was doing it, it wasn't actually a mitzvah retroactively. So according to the Rav, you're okay twice. The two reasons why that's not a problem. One is because there's no retroactive disqualification. It's not going to affect the earlier days. So that's A. But B, even if it did, it still shouldn't mess me up because I still have the count. I may not have the mitzvah for that night, maybe, but I still have the count, and therefore the Rav's Sora helps twice to make that not an issue. Now, it is interesting also, so Arya just asked another question. So one of the questions that comes up for rabbis, this becomes also where, you know, one of the stresses of the rabbin, so this is maybe not the highest, but it's up there, that it becomes a much higher stakes issue if you forget to count spheres, right? Because the rabbi often usually counts in shul on behalf of everyone else. So the question comes up, what happens if he misses a day? So he's going to have to announce to the whole tzibur for the rest of the time that he's not counting the bracha. So is there anything that we can do to save this? And we discussed a couple of rabbis' nightmare issues, you know, using the shtaros for chametz, things like that. So that's why it's a stressful position. That's why we get paid the big bucks. So what about this high stress issue? So I noticed that my friend Dov Gottlieb has a shiur about this that was highlighted in the Torah. So I didn't actually get to listen to it, but I'm sure it's very kedai listening. But the issue draws on a couple of points. You know, one is that, should we say that the cover of brios is a factor, that it's embarrassing to have to publicly announce that you missed it. The cover of brios should allow the drabanan here, maybe Rosh Hashanah Tzricha, however you want to look at it, the whole literature about that. But one of the questions is also, should we say that it's like we call arvus, right? That we have a principle that, let's say I made Kiddush on Shabbos already, and somebody else needs to hear a Kiddush. So I'm allowed to make Kiddush again a second time, even though it's not the mitzvah for me, but it's the mitzvah for them. So I'm allowed to make an extra Kiddush in order to be motzi them. So I can't fulfill somebody else's mitzvah if I'm not machuyut. So I'm not machuyut to make Kiddush twice. So we distinguish. If you're not machuyut at all, then you can't be motzi somebody else. But if you're theoretically machuyut, but you were yotzei already, so that is called machuyut v'davar, and you can be motzi somebody else. That's the principle of arvus. So some want to extend that here also, that assuming the rabbi is being most of people in shul, which isn't really what happens, because everyone after he does it then goes on to make their own bracha. But let's say that's so for argument's sake, and even people who are listening to his bracha because they missed, they'll probably say the words themselves. But let's stipulate for the purpose of this position that people are being yotze his counting of sfira. So then maybe you could say it's like making a second kiddush, that even though the kiddush is not a mitzvah for him, so it's still a mitzvah for the listener, and that justifies making Kiddush, and it works halachically. Maybe that could be true here as well, because again, the rabbi, it's even worse true, because the rabbi is certainly mechuyav v'davar, he's just has his hands tied because he missed the day. That's the expression that the Gemara has, kumahu dekayav, his mouth hurts, basically, like somebody who is mechuyav, but is missing some kind of physical component. So here, the rabbi is obligated to sphere, he just happens to have missed the part in order to allow him to perform it. But this guy who's listening is still in the game, so it's a mitzvah for that guy. So then maybe you could make a case that it should work. That's one of the svaras that are...
And maybe it should be bracha anyway.
And maybe it should be bracha anyway, especially because you have all the rishonim to say it works also. So makom kavod abrios and the like, that's also a good svara to have. So all of that... Right, so again, it's one of the very high-stress components of the job. So that enters into the equation. So, again, you know, many more shilohs, but we've got in a few minutes. So just one other shiloh that somebody asked me. So it's interesting, according to the Rav's chiluk, so you could say, let's say, for example, somebody counts, the question was asked, let's say they were looking at a phone app that was counting sphere, and they read the words, and they realized afterwards, okay, they said the night of Sfira. So So Shulchan Aruch says that you, Sadr says, you know, today is whatever it is, you know, and not intending to really count, but then they realize they've said that, the text is real. So that is, you know, we have it to practice.
During the day?
Yeah, night time, let's say that night. So it's the 14th night, and they said today is 14 days to Yom. So that in general, we know the Shulchan Aruch says that one should not answer, if someone says, what's tonight's sphere, you shouldn't say, you should say, last night is such and such, in order to avoid saying straight out what it is, because that might interfere with your ability to count with a bracha afterwards. Like the famous joke about the Baal Tshuva couple, the husband asked the wife, what's for dinner, and she says, last night was meatball. She's trained to talk like that. So when it comes to sphere, so the idea to say last night was whatever, and you'll figure out, instead of saying the day, because we're afraid that would be a key in the mitzvah of sphere. So it's just interesting to note that that has its own question. Okay, so are you allowed to count again with a bracha that night if you said it? That's a question to ask. And the truth is, there are a lot of studs in Lahakil on that issue, because you didn't have kavanah to count when you did it, and that should make a difference. That should also address the issue that the Shulchan Aruch has about saying the answer to the question. But there are grounds to be makel. But certainly one should be able then to keep counting the bracha the following nights. However, the question becomes a little more interesting. What if somebody did this, let's say with no intent to do a mitzvah, and then forgets to count later on? So then, can they count in future nights, relying on their non-intentional counting when they were just reading the words? So here the Rav is helpful again. You could say that even if that was not a mitzvah when they read it off the phone app, but it's still a maintaining of the count, and maybe we could say that things like that will allow you to keep counting in future nights, even in Tipsi Lomar, that's not the mitzvah. So there, and there's more to say about this, but we won't have time to say, we'll continue next time maybe, but that's because of this whole field up in the mitzvah and the count, sometimes we get the best of both worlds. But sometimes if it doesn't stop us from counting later that night with the bracha, because it's not a key mitzvah, but it allows us to resume in future nights even if we don't count, because it's enough of an accomplishment that it holds up the count even without being the key mitzvah itself. This is similar a little bit in the pre-app generation. So there was a tshuva of Rebbe Eger, a few tshuvas in a row, there was a troublesome tshuva of Rebbe Eger, which started a whole post-Talmudic sugya. That there is a sugya, because it's not actually in the Gemara, but the whole literature, it sounds like it's a sugya, called Ksiva Kedibur. Now we discussed Hirur Kedibur and Shemaya Kaona, those are in the Gemara, but is it considered to be Kedibur? If you have a mitzvah of Kedibur, and somebody writes something down, so is that considered to be speaking? I just once had a lunch at the house of a prominent Talmud Chacham, whose wife was relating a story that she went to a store and she was trying to buy a dress, and the salesperson wanted to convey to her the dress was actually cheaper in a different store, but she was a salesperson, so she couldn't say that. So she wrote it on a piece of paper instead of saying it out loud, and she told her husband the story at the Shabbos table. And her husband said, oh, it's Rekiv Eger, it's a Safek, Ksiv Kedibor, maybe. So Rekiv Eger has this tshuva about Ksiv Kedibor, which led to a whole literature after that, the whole Ksiv Kedibor Sugya, that was started by Rekiv Eger. People who write on their letters, so they date their letters with the date of Sphira. And writing a letter tonight, the 14th night of Sphira. So, same kind of question. First of all, is that a kiyum of Sphira? And should we say that, therefore, after that, they cannot count the bracha that night because they already did the mitzvah? And the flip side of that, does that help for future nights? That let's say they forgot to count that night, but they were writing letters throughout, and every night of Sphira they wrote a letter to somebody, and they said, or relay Sphira, even they wrote a letter to somebody, and they dated it with the date of Sphira. So maybe that should also count in order to keep one in the game and to count based on that. So there are all kinds of ripple issues that come from that, and many, many other fascinating issues that we haven't gotten to yet. So maybe, God willing, we will have the opportunity to continue that in the future. All right, so I think it's not, so we'll stop now. And again, tomorrow, I'll have a new video.